Good morning. Welcome to the procedures for managing multi-grade classroom. God is good.
All the time. God is good.
How did you learn that? Somebody must have had a procedure somewhere else that you caught on to. Imagine you woke up from surgery. Had some work done inside you, and as you're waking up, anesthesia is wearing off, and looking around, and you notice your doctor, who's calmly standing there, all of a sudden starts to look around and pat himself, and looks at his assistant. He's like, "Where's my stethoscope?" Turns and looks at your fresh abdomen with a look of horror in his eyes. We appreciate procedures in certain areas. When you hear the word managing, or you hear the word procedures, it sounds like a tiger in the forest with a loud roar, and you're headed for the nearest closet, for the nearest retreat. Or does that sound inviting to y'all when you hear procedures and managing? My goal today is, when we're done, we'll have looked at a lot of different practicals. They're probably gonna run in one ear and out the other. And that's the purpose of your sheet, is as we go down through there to fill in the blanks, and later you can look back over it as a resource. So that's the purpose here, is looking at those procedures. What if procedures don't come natural to you? Is this class still for you if you're just one of those who procedures and managing isn't natural for? I hope till we're done with this that you can be encouraged that yes, procedures are for you and that you can do them. Procedure is simply a course of action, a way of doing something. Does God use procedures? Back in the Old Testament, he gave a whole book of procedure to the Israelites in their tabernacles. They set up their tabernacles, do it this way, do it this way, do it this way. Procedures, order. And in 1 Corinthians 14:40, he says, "Let all things be done decently and in order." And that was referring to church services, but also the greater principle of Christian life. Do you use procedures in your everyday life? How many of you tie your right shoe first? If you haven't thought of that, some of you do. So all the rest of you must tie your left shoe first. It's a procedure. You do it that way every time. Who told you did your mom tell you have to start with your right foot first or your left foot? It's just something you developed by habit, perhaps without thinking. What about kicking balls? Do you kick your ball with your left foot or your right foot? When you put your coat on, do you stick your arm down the right side or the left side first? Your life revolves around procedures, although you may not even recognize it as a procedure. And today, looking at procedures in a classroom, it's an intentional focus on some of those things that hopefully are already in place, but if they're not, gives you an idea of what it could look like. Remember, you can learn procedures, and we'll look at how a little bit later. One of the biggest things, hindrances in procedures, is managing time. Is knowing how to manage time, and managing time ties heavily into your priorities. The things you get done in a day were the things that you prioritize the most highly. It's basically what it boils down to. So if we're going to learn procedures and managing time, we're going to have to get our priorities straight. What's important to me? Self-discipline ties heavily into this. Are you self-disciplined? We can ask questions like, can I get to bed on time? And can I wake up on time? We can ask questions like, do I know how much money I'm spending? Do I know how much money I'm making? Do I have a plan for it? Do I show up on time for events? Church, schoolroom, Wednesday evening. Do I show up at work on time? Do we have conscientious eating habits? Do we consistently overeat or maybe grab a Twinkies on our way somewhere and that consists of our lifestyle? What happens when I have spare time? Does all my spare time kind of trickle to just messing around, this and that? Those are little glimpses into my level of discipline in life. One more thing that ties heavily into procedures is personal holiness. Procedures result out of a pursuit of a vision. And when my vision doesn't stem from an ordered life inside me, when my life inside me is not ordered, it's going to be very difficult to actually order my surroundings. And personal holiness, when it comes to things of moral matters, things of integrity, are those things in place in my life? And if not, that is a good place to start this morning. Get those things straight first, and then you have a lot better chance at success in the procedures in classroom. Throughout this course, I'll be asking you what procedures you had in school. So be thinking of what procedures you had in school whenever you go through these. So why do we use procedures? We'll go down through your lists there. Just fill in the blanks. We'll go pretty fast here. Why would we use procedures? First of all, they're a biblical concept. We looked at that already. They help teach the importance of following instructions. I'm working right now at home. I'm working on a very complex footer foundation for a large building. And on the set of plans, it says the first, I have a footer cut here, and the next footer was supposed to jump up 30 inches before proceeding with the next footer. I ran the whole thing at 18 inches. Every step was at 18 inches, and my first step was supposed to be 30. It could have had the potential, if I wouldn't have been working for some really nice people, to undo my whole last 3 days worth of work. So teaching your students how to follow directions will have very real life consequences at the end of the day. They help to teach disciplines that will be needed later in life and in the classroom. They help to minimize confusion. They help to keep a group of people functioning as a unit. They allow for more efficient work, which results in more time for the necessary things to get done. They allow more freedom for you to be gone or step away from the classroom for moments when you need to. They help provide security for children. They help to create a safe learning environment. And that list can go on and on, but procedures are very important. Let's move on to the more practical side of procedures. We're going to start with personal life. What procedures are you going to have in your personal life at home that help you to reach your procedures in school life? The first one I have there is study scripture and pray much. The procedure of the first thing in the morning when I wake up to spend time meditating and in prayer is going to, as Mervyn Showalter told us, set me in the right frame of mind. The Israelites went out every day to gather manna. God specifically told them, don't go out there and gather manna for the next day, except on Friday they were to gather twice for Saturday. But God gives you manna for the day. He doesn't give you manna for next month. He doesn't give you manna for last week. He gives you manna for today. Go ahead and get it. You'll need it. Every morning before school started, I would take a walk and pray for each of my students by name. And doing that gives you the frame of mind, and it can help you to keep the important things first. Because after all, this is about character. This is about spiritual development as well. And when we look at it strictly through academic eyes, we're missing some of those foundational aspects of teaching. This has been emphasized, but I'm going to put a sledgehammer on it again. Is get your sleep. You're not a superhero. Sleep produces lethargy, tiredness, moodiness, short tempers, mistakes, and worst of all, gray hair. So if you want to avoid some of those terrible syndromes, then get your sleep. That means you're going to have to get to bed on time, and you're also going to have to set a rising time. Just some very basic procedures in your life. Spend time regularly with your peers. I'm not sure how this relates with getting enough sleep, but spend time with your peers where you can. Next, spend time with your students outside the school setting. It's amazing what you'll find out about your sixth grader when you're sitting around a campfire versus around your class table. Some of the things make sense in the classroom all of a sudden. Attend church and social functions. Again, we're getting a context for my student. Exercise regularly, and I'm not talking about buying a $10,000 gym set for your year. It can be as simple as just making it a plan of walking a mile a day. Just something that simple has huge end results that you won't find out till you actually do it. Read to keep your reservoir full and overflowing. And I would recommend, whether you're a reader or not, to read a good book at least once a month. Once a week would be better, but once a month. I know of an individual who just recently, he really struggled to read 8 to 10 books a year. But he made it a resolve, this is important in my life, and I'm going to do it. And he read well over 20 books that year, just by little 10-minute, 15-minute windows. First thing in the morning, you read that sector. So make it a priority. So remember, the procedures you're setting in your personal life are going to set you up for either success or failure in the classroom. Because if you can keep them in your personal life, you'll be able to keep them much better in your public life. Procedures in preparing for the school year. The first one there, make sure all the correct books are there. I'm not sure if I've had a year yet out of the 9 terms I've taught that I had every single book when I started my first day. For all my students. That's partly my fault. I should have been more detailed, but I tried to be. I thought I was ready, but there's inevitably almost those last minute details you're going to have to catch right before school. Scan the books you will be teaching to get a bird's eye view. I would recommend, if you haven't done this yet, pull out all the teacher's manuals and read what the publishers wrote for you as a teacher to read at the beginning of the book there. It's amazing the discoveries you'll make there. They actually were some pretty smart people who wrote some of this curriculum. They thought through a lot of things, but sometimes we miss the context of the teaching, the lessons, and we can get that by looking at their notes at the beginning. Don't hesitate to ask questions of former teachers, and I would actually recommend try your best to have just a great chat about last year with last year's current teacher. They can really enlighten you on a lot of things. Next one, plan at least the first 2 or 3 weeks of school. I tried to do at least 3. And in doing that, children are they're very eager when they come to school the first couple days especially. And just dish the work to them while they're eager and energetic. Do 2 lessons in 1 day if they're ready for it. Just get as much done, because once you hit the last month or 2 of school, they're not ready to double up anymore. So do your doubling up right off the bat while they have the energy, and then you can give them a break later when they need it. Plan fairly meticulously what you will do the first day. I always sat down, just tried to make it a point, 30 minutes, an hour the day before, and just thought my way through every scenario. So it's 9 o'clock. All these scary students are now right in front of me, and I'm supposed to say something. What am I going to tell them? Think through that. Maybe even have your first opening speech ready, just to help you feel more prepared for that moment. And just every 5 minutes of the day, how's it going to look? And you're probably not going to get it right, but at least you can deviate from your plan when you need to, rather than feel that fear gripping you about, I don't know what to do next. Try to learn something about each of your students before the first day of school. That's pretty easy to do if you're teaching at your home congregation, but if you're teaching elsewhere, that can be a struggle, but it's well worth the effort. So prepare for your school year. I personally like to block out the last 2 weeks of school. The last 2 weeks of summer work. Told the business, hey, I don't want to work the last 2 weeks, which basically is from now till school for us. Just go to school and just think through everything. Write out schedules, write out plans, read your books, just familiarize yourself. And I often found my first week or two or three of school was actually pretty light. I'd go home at the end of the day because there wasn't much to do anymore. Those first couple weeks actually are kind of pretty light if you're well prepared. Procedures in my devotional period. Inevitably, you'll get to school, and it's one of those teachers' secrets that they don't talk about, but you'll discover an hour before school that it was my turn to have devotions this morning. Have a schedule for what happens each day. Whose turn is it in 2 weeks on Monday to have devotions if you're sharing it out with other teachers? That leads us to the next thing. Have a devotional theme. Just something like covering the fruits of the Spirit or going through the book of Genesis. Or doing character studies of individuals. Having that pre-planned before the year ever starts so that when it comes Friday morning, you can just, let's see what's next. Oh, that's the next study. Here we go. Getting ready. There's not that panic before the day starts. Set something as a beginning activity. Oftentimes a small little procedure there. God is good all the time God is good just helps to bring everybody together. Try to include three things: Bible reading, singing, and prayer. If you can get your students beyond Bible reading, you're one of the first teachers that ever managed to get that far with your students. Mastering those basics is not simple stuff. It is incredible if you can master the basics. Keep your devotions short and practical. And I would say go beyond the be good and be kind devotionals. At the end of the devotional, the student's thinking, okay, I need to be nice today, or I need to be good. Those are nice, but they're not going to stimulate your child and engage him on how fascinating all the things they could be learning in Scripture wherever you have them. Teach them the fascination of nature. Teach them the incredibleness of this Bible story, how this actually worked. What happened with that miracle? Can we imagine that, seeing that today? Bring those basic stories to life. And end your devotions with prayer. And if your students pray, you'll find out a lot about what means. You'll find out what's important to them by what they pray about. That can be really enlightening. So have your devotional periods worked out, ideally before you start school. Procedures in preparing for classes. Another one of those things that teachers hint at sometimes, but aren't always honest, is the day that they taught the wrong lesson. And after class, one of the sixth graders timidly says, "Aren't we on lesson 55 today?" And at that moment, you want to just shake them, because where were you this whole time? Why didn't you tell me that I was on the wrong lesson? But it was my fault that I'm on the wrong lesson, not theirs. So when that happens, just let it put us back to knowing the lesson that we're teaching. Don't assume that you can just shoot it from the hip on the new lesson. Chances are, if you're not passionate about the lesson, you could be studying more on it. Knowledge begets passion. So if we're not passionate about a subject, good chances we're ignorant on a lot of stuff about it. Be familiar with how to do the lesson. And if extra items are needed for the class, make sure to tell your students the day before, not the morning of. Get your illustrations ready. Try to have a lot of them. Look ahead often. It should be a regular practice with when you're scheduling out your work to know what lessons are coming up. Many a teacher has been overworked because of his lack of looking ahead. So if you like to have an easy load, look far enough ahead so that you can be there. Think of practical applications for life. If Johnny's dad is a small engine repair mechanic, you can tell him, so if someone comes into your shop and buys three sets of mower blades and they're $15.99 each, how much tax is that customer going to have to pay your dad? That just brings it home to him. It makes him realize this is practical life. This is what dad faces. And it's going to make math class more engaging if you bring what they already know into that scenario to where they're working out. It becomes their problem now rather than just this abstract thing out there that somebody dreamed up. If possible, do outside reading on the subject. We talked about reading books already. And if lots of student reading is necessary, it might be wise to assign reading ahead of time, especially in upper grades when you see some of those essays coming up or those compositions or research articles. To wait until the day that you're signing the lesson to talk about it, you're almost behind times already. Maybe a week ahead, warn them this lesson's coming up. Tell them what they need to do, what books they need to read to bring to school so that they're ready for that when the day comes. That can really help out. Try to think of a time in your life when this particular lesson may have applied. Guaranteed, if you tell stories about your life, you'll have your students' attention. So remember, procedures in preparing for classes. You want to get up to that class table and you want to be ready. Could I have the you three boys there on the third row? Could I have y'all come up to class table? The table's invisible here. Is it no seat? Yeah. Oh, wait. You need your pens. And actually, like your papers too. There we go. Okay, we can be seated. So thinking of class time here, conducting classes. From the time you say class time, seventh grade, till they're seated up here, I like to try to do it within 30 seconds. Sometimes 2 minutes later, the reason I started doing that, sometimes 2 minutes later, the desk lid is still open and somebody's doing this in there, and I can't find my paper. Or they come up to the class table and we start checking and somebody's missing their pen. Or the pen's not working, they're trying to get this thing to work, and so I got to go pull the desk drawer open, get my red pen, and give it to them. It just, to have a seamless transition from their desk up to here, and they had to guess who's going to sit where. They were mature about it, and they just chose, but your sixth graders may not have that nice of a time figuring out who's going to sit where. It might look a little bit more like this. These green arrows are the ideal. Sarah comes up this side and sits on her side. James comes up this side and sits on his side. Sally sits in the middle, and so she comes straight. How it usually works in the classroom is James is on this side. He comes across, hits Sally's direction of path, comes across and hits Sarah's direction of path and sits on this side. And she, somehow the law of nature is just... So thinking through your classroom strategy about who's sitting where and where they're going to end up at the classroom, and on day one or two actually running that procedure just five times, one after the other, until it happens just like you wanted it to. 10 days later, things are just sailing along. Otherwise, 2 months later, you might still be stressing about how two minutes later, we're still trying to figure this thing out. You may go back to your seats. Thanks for your help there. Make sure the students know clearly what's expected of them. Are they supposed to sit up straight? Or is it okay if they're leaning like this while they're checking? Really? Is it okay? Communicate that with them. No, that's not okay, or whatever you come up with. Are they allowed to make foot contact down there? Just all kinds of things. Just think through those and be ready for that. I have a policy about talking during class, and I have in parentheses even the nonverbal talking. They're very effective at eye communication as well. So just cutting down that communication is excellent. Be alert to how much they already know. We'll cover that more in 7 laws, but don't be teaching stuff that they already know. Review a lot. Try to make it varied and interesting. Don't ask the same question 5 times in a row. Unless you're teaching more lower grades, upper grades, try to vary the question 5 different ways to instill the principle rather than just getting a certain word. Use the board a lot. Ask lots of questions. Try to get your students to do board work, actually get them up here. You'll find out how much they actually know. Maybe less than you thought. And practice oral reading. It takes longer, yes, but it's valuable. Have a good idea of what's going to happen at your class table. Procedures and study time. You want a classroom that's quiet. Believe it or not, you can have a quiet classroom. Expect that. All the noise and the shuffle and stuff is unnecessary. You don't have to put up with that. It can be quiet. Require a signal before allowing students to speak, and not a verbal one. Have a system for how the student decides in which order to complete the subjects. Is it clear that his math lesson must be done before he goes to English? Or maybe you would rather have him, no matter what, your math goes in your desk, you start on your English. Does he know, is it okay if he works on his spelling first thing in the morning, rather than doing his math that he ought to be doing? Communicate real clearly to your students what order you expect their assignments to be done, the priorities, and that may vary from classroom to classroom depending on how you set it up, but do make sure that's clear. Make a policy that only one student may be out of their desk at a time, especially in larger rooms. These incidences here, classroom space is small, and those incidences just multiply when you have more than one student running around. Limit student traffic in and out of the classroom. So maybe you have a one student up, but what if a student went to the restroom and someone's up at the library? The next student comes in, there's 2 people walking around the room now. Is that okay? Communicate that with the children. Does it count total? Or does it count that one that went to the restroom as well? Just clearly communicate that expectation. Teach students how to find answers rather than just giving them. Don't be one of those ka-ching machines. Insert a quarter and ka-ching, out comes the prize. if your student comes up to you and inserts a quarter and out comes the answer, hopefully they go broke fast, but figure that out. And I would encourage you to try setting a time for zero questions. Just tell your students, hey, for the next 20 minutes, I'm not accepting questions. And it allows you to check or prepare for the next class and helps them to study better. So know what's going to happen in your study time and how to prepare for that. Procedures and discipline. Some of the favorite parts of teaching. But remember, how you discipline is a direct result of your perspective, how God deals with you. So spend time thinking about your perspectives of God and how He chastens you. And that's going to really help you to become effective in your discipline to your students. Because a wrong concept of God with a right concept of discipline is going to clash somewhere. So seek God. Think about the master teacher. Be consistent, be consistent, be consistent. If you make a rule, then you as a teacher are required to, every time that rule is broken, you must be there. Whatever you do, be there somehow. Otherwise, you are setting a premise for rule breaking that is okay. And we don't want that to happen. Make rules only after you've thought them through, never on the spur of the moment. Build your rules on the principles. Make few and simple rules. Imagine if you had these three rules in class. Don't distract, be kind, and pay attention. Could you get a more model student out of that? That covers anything that, basically almost anything that ever happens. You're either breaking don't distract, be kind, or pay attention. Somehow one of those three always gets dropped in every scenario almost. So keep your rules basic enough. That way it covers a broad spectrum of things. But don't be scared to get practical with them. Communicate to parents promptly. Don't wait till report cards to shock them with Sally's behavior. Watch and wait if you're not sure about something. And I have a feeling that the parents of that child know better what's happening than you do. And so for you to have questions about a child's behavior, and you just chat with the parents and say, hey, I've been wondering about this with that child. Does this sound familiar with you, or is this am I going out on a limb? And just a friendly conversational chat with the parent can really highlight the backdrop to some of the things you deal with in the classroom. So don't be scared to do that. Get help. You can call 1-800-JONAH-VENA. Or whoever. Do talk with people when you run into these. You are not expected to know the answer to every problem. You just simply aren't. You don't have to know the answer to every problem you face. Make it a team effort when you face problems. Get help of your board, your parents, child's parents, whatever. There's answers, but they don't all have to be here. And the last one there, consider some kind of demerit or detention system. I personally have not used this. I know teachers who have been successful with it. But the thing of consistency to me is the biggest deal. If you are consistent with how you operate, there's going to be a peace with that that is a blessing. So make sure you understand what's going to happen with discipline in your classroom. Procedures with recess. As you notice here, this is Sally again. And this, I have a feeling that a list of 5 or 6 games up on the wall for them to choose from looks kind of like this when they actually go to see it. Based on their responses, they sit there and go, as if this is an eternal value system. Like, if you get the wrong game, life is going to be destroyed. So I would encourage you, keep your game selection, just keep it very minimal. Sometimes playing a whole game for a week, maybe they'll complain a little bit, but choose your battle. You're going to face that on the other side. So Pick a game. Game committees can be useful. Having certain students be the ones who get the game the day before from that student can help minimize some of the pressure. You as a teacher don't have to dash around at every recess chasing this elusive game. Require prompt participation from everyone. It shouldn't be an option to just sit on the sidelines and say, well, I don't feel like playing today. Next one, you play too. Next one, have a clear signal when recess begins and when recess ends. Require prompt return to seats after recess. Do they know when to quit talking when they get in from recess? So, do you have a procedure for recess? Teacher checking. Have students organize the stack of books or papers. Oftentimes what happens after school is you have this whole stack sitting here. You spend 5 or 10 minutes doing this, trying to get everything sorted out so that you can actually start checking. You can save yourself quite a bit of time by having the students themselves, when they put it up there, to actually sort it out right. Obviously, younger grades, that would become more difficult with their level of ability, but aim to have your students handed in a way that makes sense to you. Ask students to hand in books open. If you're handing in books, have them turn it in open. That way you don't have to find their lesson. Set aside a specific time in the afternoon for checking. And it would be nice if your co-teachers would know when that is and ask them to knock on the door before they come in during that period. The goal is you want to have a dedicated time, because if you're dashing in and out of the room, you're just not going to get checking done very well. Being interrupted. Put away distractions while checking. Hey, could you wait a little bit? I got a class going right now. Sure, thank you. I'll call you back. Phones have this button. It's called the teacher assist. Shut down everything on your desk. And get your desk all nice and tidy. Put everything away. Alright. The rest of the desk still looks like it does, but you get the point. You're not going to check well if you have all those distractions sitting around you. And your goal is you want to get checking done. Have procedures for teacher checking. Procedures for checking in class. Have a system for who checks which book once they get up there. Does Sarah know that she checks Sally's paper? Or does Sally check James's paper? You may have, if you don't have that set up, you may have parts of lessons in two different students' hands, depending on the energy levels that day. Have a designated color of pen for marking wrong ones. Require close attention from them. Read answers without stopping for questions, and I say mostly because sometimes as a teacher I'm reading the wrong spot and spending the next 3 minutes reading tomorrow's lesson. It's not going to help anybody. So watch out if too many hands go up at once. But as a whole, save questions for later if you can. Answer questions at the end. As far as checking quickly, try to have standardized points. I like to have in the teacher's manual, I like to have the number of points written there. That way, checking in class, I don't have to spend time counting the points that day. Just open your book. Three wrong, have my grader right there. There's the number of points. You can give them the answer right away. So think through your checking experience. What kind of experience do you want? And tailor that to the most effective, streamlined way. Free time procedures, read books, create something artful. What are you going to do when Johnny is sitting there with his hand in the air? What can I do, teacher? You just going to tell him, go chill? Study Bible memory. Hey, Johnny, your mom's sick, right? Can you write her a note of encouragement today? That would be very profitable for him the next 10 minutes. Write reports on countries. I still remember when I was in fifth or sixth grade, my teacher had me write a report on Madagascar. And to this day, I know exactly where it's at, where it is, and some of the statistics I remembered. Look over work. He might have had some wrong yesterday that he's getting consistently wrong. Have him look over that and work on that. Organize the desk. If you go around looking in all the students' desks, you may be surprised what you find. It may not be a good one. So think through free time procedures. Do your students know what to do once they're all done with their work? Miscellaneous ones. These are just miscellaneous. Before you start school, read books about teaching. You'll hear more about those later, the types of books. Talk to other teachers. Attend midterm teachers' meetings. This one you may have to beg your board to do, to let you go. If something isn't working, keep it or change it. What do y'all think?
Change it.
Change it. Mm-hmm. Something's not working, change it. Keep your school board in the loop. And lastly, get objective opinions on things. Objective opinions don't come during times of heat, conflict. Objective opinions usually have to come from people who are uninvolved in your immediate scenario. So reach out. Contact objective opinions. I had mentioned that I was going to be asking you for procedures that you all remember. I didn't do that. We're running very short on time. But before I wrap it up, were there any questions, any comments, or maybe a procedure that really stood out to you in your school days, or was there anything like that that was going through your mind as you thought through some of these? Any questions you might have?
I was just wondering what you meant by standardized points. You said you use standardized points for checking in class, you don't have to count them up. Is that what you're saying? How's that work?
As far as, I think what I was referring to by the standardized is use the same method of points the same way. So like in English, how do you count points for if the period is... So if you're checking for punctuation, the students should know how you check if a period's wrong. Do they count it a half wrong, a whole wrong? Is it too wrong for that sentence? That way they can make some of those decisions on their own in the moment rather than more questions at the end of class. Good question. Do any of you remember a school devotional from your years? Like one that just left an impression? Yes?
I remember one where my teacher was talking about how God tastes, and he gave us each a little dab of honey on our desk when he was having his devotion time. That was, I will say, 7 years ago. That's what I remember.
Okay, there you go. That involved the senses, the taste sense. I've already had the students do 1-minute devotionals and all eight of my students did a devotional that morning. They were supposed to bring an object and a Bible verse that reminded them of that object and make the connection between the two. Just 1 minute, just real short, and they loved it because there's all kinds of action. It's nonstop going. And at the end, they can almost remember all the Bible verses from that session. That's amazing. So, well, you're probably not going to, yes?
I was going to add with that, students love suggesting devotions. I have had my students bring an object to school that I have to have devotions about. It's a procedure that gets them involved in it, and they're looking forward to your devotions.
Right. Involve their senses in the devotion. You're probably not going to get all these procedures done in your year, and you may not even want to do all these procedures, but do think about them and consider them. Aim high. Your level of success in the classroom is going to be largely based on some of these procedures, how well of a classroom you run. Don't believe you're the exception to the rule. You're a human, you're probably an average human, maybe just a little bit better than the average. But you do need procedures in your classroom. So, Lord bless you as you go. Thanks for your good attention. You're dismissed. God be with you.